Hi, everyone, and welcome to Keyframe, the Geek Show's dedicated animation podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today is Tucky.
Hello, people.
And nobody else.
They're here in spirit somewhere in the ever.
See, you make it sound like we killed them and buried the bodies.
Yeah, we've got recording equipment now, just getting the spirit voices, just the screams of their last pain and torture.
Is this going to be some kind of weird poltergeist thing?
Says Mark from under the floorboards. We move on.
Yes, we move on. We move on to big news, everybody. Sorry.
Oh, you said good news.
I had to do it like that. Yeah, apparently the My Hero Academia film has been doing quite well at the US box office, even though it's only been on limited release at a certain number of cinemas, and it's an early screening as well, isn't it?
Yes, quite well indeed. All of the English dub voice actors, actresses, directors, and everybody had their own little red carpet shindig going on. It's weird to think, because like, go back a few years and voice actors were just happy that people like remember the names.
Yeah.
And now they're getting these lavish red carpet like premieres, and it's all moving so fast.
Well, it's moving so fast now, but remember, Tucky, remember what the pain we had to go through just for, like, an English sub, never mind an English dub.
No, we're still going through the English dub, because us here in the UK, the sunny UK...
Oh, I forgot, we don't have an English dub, we have an American dub. Yay.
Yeah, we don't even have that at times, lest we forget One Piece Gold, which had a worldwide release, but the UK have yet to see it. And how long ago was that?
It's because we're not part of the world anymore. Ever since Brexit, you know, we're off the map.
it's one of you can imagine all the at the UN, like, oh well, they want this anime. It's like, nah, there's just the RE on their own.
It's just a hole on the map where the UK used to be. We're adrift in the Atlantic at Tucky.
The whole world's just looking at it like, nah, they said they want the space. That's the mess. Back to
My Hero Academia. Yeah. The numbers are actually pretty impressive. According to Box Office Mojo, over the 2-day screenings, it brought in $1,855,040. And this was on Tuesday and Wednesday screenings. So midweek screenings to start off with, limited screenings, so only certain cinemas in the US. And it's before the actual release of the film as well. That's $947,000 on one day, and on the Wednesday, it was $907,000. So it's done really well. It's actually outsold The Predator and The Nun, surprisingly enough.
Just to name a few.
Yeah, just to name a few. And the thing that's impressive about it is that it has outsold those films. Now, I'm not going to say it's going to outsell those films when it comes to the gross box office, the whole thing, because they have wider distribution, they're running every single day, everything like that. So they'll obviously outsell My Hero Academia in the long term.
Well, it's one of them things, though, like we're saying, this is the start. Well, yeah. What I'm personally predicting as the start of anime becoming more widespread. I mean, we've spoken about this like over the last God knows how long. That the anime is going to get to a point, because, I mean, we've had, like, little screenings here and there, Sword Art, the Dragon Ball Z, Super movies.
You reach that saturation point where something has to give. It all starts spilling over. It'll basically muffin top its way into, you know, being mainstream. I hate to put it like that.
It is. It's the right analogy for it. And, I mean, with My Hero Academia, it is... It's a very Western kind of anime, you know, superheroes, the main hero wears the Star Spangled Banner, you know, it's everything that gets Americans hard.
Well, maybe not that phrase, but I know what you mean. The thing about My Hero Academia is that it's an easy story for them to get into when it comes to more complex anime, when it comes to more of the emotional stuff. It's not as easy, and I think the other aspect of it is Dragon Ball. Let's not forget that Dragon Ball has basically paved a massive road for a lot of shows like My Hero Academia.
it's created that niche, which has become so mainstream that we see celebrities that like anime, and the one constant of it is, oh, Dragon Ball.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's that all guts go for the glory, you know, balls to the wall, no quit, big nuts, male icon leading the charge and fighting everybody with his fist type show, which for some reason really goes down well in America. I wonder why.
I know. When you look at the president, you wouldn't think they'd go for the kind of heroic big man kind of thing.
Oh, you mean the King Kong of Twitter, as we've taken to calling him?
Yeah.
I was watching King Kong the other day.
That's just got images in my head now.
I was watching the Jack Black King Kong, you know, the Peter Jackson one. I was watching that bit where he's on top of the Empire State Building. I went, looks a bit like Trump, actually.
No, Trump would only go for the bigger buildings like Trump Tower.
You understand what I mean?
The guy that took the World Trade Center, like, being demolished in a terrorist thing and saying, well, at least my building's now one of the bigger ones.
Yep. But anyway, leaving the King Kong of Twitter aside.
Yeah. Impressive numbers. The thing is, in this industry, money talks.
It does, but there will inevitably be a fallout from this. I hate to say it, you know, I hate to play a devil's advocate. I hate to...
You love playing that game. I've seen your trophies.
Yeah, this is true. I'm very good at devil's advocate as a game. Very good at it because half the time I'm proven right. In fact, 3/4 of the time, I hate being right about this. But unfortunately, being a student of human nature, sometimes these things are obvious. The fallout from this will be Hollywood will make a run for loads of different titles, loads of different properties, and try and get them out in the cinemas because they've seen something has been popular, and then all of a sudden, the shows that they'll pick, they won't have put any thought into. They won't have thought, okay, why is My Hero Academia so popular? They won't lay the groundwork by having a couple of anime series on TV, for example, or on a streaming service. And then they'll basically go down the same route that they've been down, literally, because this has happened a couple of times before, where you had an anime movie which actually did really well, or surprisingly well, surprised a lot of people. And then all of a sudden, Hollywood jumped on the bandwagon. They tried clamoring for this and that, this title or that property. And they tried putting them out and they failed. And the reason why they failed is because they put no thought into what they were putting out.
Well, you see, that's got us thinking, because the types of Universal, Sony Pictures, they actually own a lot of anime properties now, if they know it or not.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder if they look to this and go, oh, well, that makes a lot of money on the big screen.
Yeah.
What else do we have? And maybe, just maybe, they might start to put thought into it, lest we have another Dragon Ball Evolution saga.
Yeah.
And they might actually take it to the side, because there's, like we say, there's a lot more people who's got into the industry.
Yeah.
Who can actually turn around to these executives and go, like, you know, well, what are your plans? And they'll say, oh, well, we're doing this. And they can go, no, wait. That won't go well.
Yeah.
You know, take a step back rather than rush it and say, like, oh, My Hero Academia's made this much. Let's just fling everything onto the big screen and hope it sells.
Yeah, I mean,
they'll take a methodical look at it and say, right, what can work? What has potential? What doesn't have potential?
Yeah.
You know, what could work on the big screen rather than
the small screen? Hope is a great thing, you know? Hope is a great thing. Unfortunately, we live in a world where we have, I hate to mention his name because he's a scumbag, but Harvey Weinstein's of the world, the ones who basically control Hollywood. I don't like the Weinstein brothers because they bought loads of licenses for martial arts films and then put them in a vault and never let them be released. And my main concern are people like that who sit at the top and make these decisions, pass their orders on down like kings, and then basically things screw up and then the medium, unfortunately, gets the blame for a bad decision made at the top.
Well, let's hope that the mistakes have been learned from, because anime has that potential. It can be a golden age for anime if they can get this big screen formula right.
Yeah, but the thing is, we've seen it
with the comic book movies, when they get it wrong, it gets it right, you've got billion-dollar franchises waiting to happen.
It has to go both ways, though. It can't just be America adapting to anime. It has to be anime adapting to the rest of the world.
Oh, there's got to be some give, because we know the Japanese are very protective of what happens. That's why most of the live action adaptations are from Japan, because they don't trust the world. They don't trust America. More accurately, Dragon Ball Evolution.
I was going to say Dragon Ball Evolution kind of highlights it. They've got a bit more faith in America now after Ghost in the Shell. Yes, it wasn't a great... The thing is, it wasn't a great Ghost in the Shell movie, but it was a solid action sci-fi movie.
I enjoyed it for what it was as well.
I think that Battle Angel Alita looks quite interesting. Yes, they've changed the story from the manga and from the OVA. That's fine. That's artistic license. I'm not going to say that I'm not unhappy about the changes to the story, because I think some of those changes are fundamental to the character of Alita and her development later on in the story. But I can understand why those changes have been made. And I can accept that, you know? It's the same with Ghost in the Shell. I can understand why certain changes to the story were made, why the story played out the way it did. I can accept that. I'm not happy about it, but I can accept that they were necessary for the runtime, for the Western audience, various things like that. And I think anime need, you know, the anime studios, the creators, the producers, the manga authors, everybody involved in anime and manga over in Japan, they need to take a step back and say, okay, we can produce this, but they'll probably want to make changes. So instead of being really, really defensive about it, why don't we say, okay, this is the core of it. What changes do you want to make? We'll work with you. We'll try and reimagine this so it fits with your vision and still adheres to what our vision was originally.
Yeah, if there was a cooperation and a great kind of communication channel opened between like all parties involved.
Yeah.
If they can master that, because it's one of them things, like they say, I mean, in the world today, there's so little cooperation. Nobody listens to another person. Yeah. Everybody has to be right, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's something that's obviously in Hollywood, because you'd rather be right than to, you know, accept that some things might not work and work with it. And we as anime fans can just hope, of all hopes, that they can get it right. And if they can nail that formula on early on, then it's only of benefit to everybody who loves anime and the potential of new fans as well.
I'll be honest. Do you know who I think is going to nail that formula first?
Go on.
Netflix.
Well, they already got the groundwork in.
Yeah.
They've already done so much. I mean, Castlevania,
yeah.
I am looking forward to that so much.
Yeah, I think Netflix will basically get that formula right first, and I think Sony will be second. The advantage that Sony have over just about every other company in Hollywood is that Sony is a Japanese company.
It'd be weird for them, like, take it from Japanese to make it American to make it back to Japanese.
Yeah, but this is the thing. Sony basically just go, okay, we've got these properties, we want to make a live-action movie out of them. And they just basically say, okay, Sony Entertainment Japan, which one do you recommend? What's doing well in the charts? What's the buzz? You know, which one of these titles? We've got a shortlist here. And they'll just go, that one. Do that one. That's all they need to do.
Right? They're well connected. Based in Japan is a huge advantage.
Yeah, it's literally all in-house with Sony. That's the thing. It's all in-house. And they've got contacts with all of the anime studios as well. So whether it's Production IG, whether it's A1 Pictures, whether it's Bones or whoever else, they've got contacts with all of them. And how many people from those studios, from any of the studios, would not want to work with Sony?
Exactly. And I mean, we're seeing it more in America as well. It's not just the big screen, but I've noticed Toonami's getting quite a few things. They've just had Boruto. Yes, grown. It's okay.
No, but he will never, ever be Boruto. He is always Bort.
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 Naruto's son.
Bort.
Naruto's dad's son.
See, this is the thing. If he is Bort, then Naruto is not Naruto. Naruto is not.
And actually, there's another one. There is the live-action Dragon Ball Super Broly dub trailer out now. Don't know how long that's been out, but Dragon Ball's gaining a lot of traction again. And I'll say partly in thanks to Team Four Star finishing off their Cell Saga.
Part of it is that, but I think the other part of it is you have Ronda Rousey wearing an over 9,000 t-shirt at WrestleMania.
Ah, that was WrestleMania 3 years ago. She's women's champion now.
Yeah, but this is the thing. That might have been WrestleMania 3 years ago, but I'd say that had a massive impact. Because don't forget, Team Four Star might have finished their Cell Saga and they might have reached loads and loads of people. But ultimately, it's not on the same level as the WWE. It's not on the same level as WrestleMania, is it?
Well, it's not, because WrestleMania is the granddaddy of them all. WrestleMania. Well, it's the thing. It's not just Rousey. It's
Sasha Banks. You've got
New Day when they came out in the same armor. Yeah. That was also like two or 3 years ago as well.
Exactly. But you've got New Day coming out in the same armor. You've got Sasha Banks being a terminal Sailor Moon fan. You've got loads and loads of wrestlers now who are loads and loads of sports people and loads of celebrities who are basically coming forward and saying they like anime. Michael B. Jordan is a massive anime fan.
Oh, either. He was huge for it as well, especially around the hype of Black Panther.
Yeah.
When he's just like, like Naruto. I mean, there's American football players, linebackers. Brian Oviedo, Sunderland's left back, Brian Oviedo, has special Dragon Ball Z football boots made for himself.
Yeah.
I did not... Being a Sunderland fan, I was just sitting there like, you what?
You didn't know this?
Yeah, he's got dudes from around with Piccolo on his feet.
Hang on, how did you not know this, and yet I do?
No, I knew that there was some footballers, that there's a special design football boot of Dragon Ball characters, but it came as a shock to me that it was actually a Sunderland player as well, because I think it was first the Crystal Palace player.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh yeah, Brian Oviedo's a huge anime fan.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there like, but he's like one of our best players. he's in Sunderland. He's not supposed to know culture.
I can't remember which player it was. I think he plays in Serie A. And he's basically got One Piece boots.
Yeah. There's some dude making proper anime football boots. And that's amazing in itself. I mean, you know, like, I'm not saying, well, it's League One, so it's not like the big stage, but I mean, the dude who plays for Crystal Palace,
when I said Serie A, I'm talking about Italian League.
Yeah, the main Italian League as well. Yeah. I mean, it's just baffling, like, you know, you mentioned anime a few years ago, it'd be like, oh, so you watch the schoolgirls, octopuses and that, no, you're one of them weirdos. And then all of a sudden, it's like movie stars and... Like we say, we're seeing this steady progression. It's becoming more acceptable.
Yeah,
it's shedding that old image.
The problem is there's a pushback from that. The pushback comes from within the anime community.
They don't want it to be mainstream. They want it to be their own little secret thing that they keep in the cupboard that only they can play with.
My precious.
Yeah.
The problem there is when you have a hostile community, you basically bar any possibility of evolving, of becoming better, of becoming something that everybody can appreciate. And for those of us who started off, I mean, I've been watching anime for longer than you've been alive, Tucky. Right?
Yeah, you're old.
Yeah, I is old. I is proper old, okay? But I won't make any bones about it, even though I will eventually just be bones. The simple fact is, for many, many years, we wanted anime to be more mainstream. We wanted more people to understand and appreciate what we were watching. We wanted people to actually enjoy what we were watching. And we tried getting people involved. We would introduce our friends and our family and all sorts of other people to this show, that show. And then we stopped. And the reason why we stopped is because the community itself became hostile to outsiders.
That's actually still a thing, which is
But that's the thing that it's a horrible thing that's happened, and it's still there, and it's just because it's just becoming worse over time. And the problem with that is that when the community becomes hostile to outsiders, then that means when studio executives are looking at the community, they're basically looking at it with objective eyes. They're not judging the community based on how passionate they are about a particular show. They're looking at the community and judging it based on how horrible they are as human beings and saying, we don't want any part of this show because the fans are like this. And that is the big problem. See, My Hero Academia doing really well is great, but can you imagine if they wanted to do something that would...
Well, they did that with Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah.
So you saw the whole... Oh, the whitewashing it. It's being
which the irony with that is the Japanese audience was totally fine with Scarlett Johansson being the Major.
Yeah, it's just white people being offended on behalf of other races. Because I don't know if it's what they call it, like white guilt.
No, it's white saviorism. It's not white guilt. It's white saviorism. That's literally what it's called. I mean, have you not seen that Lindsay Lohan thing? Have you not heard of this?
Something about Insta. It just popped up on me. I haven't seen it.
She had a 10-minute meltdown with a homeless Syrian refugee family. Initially, she wanted to help them, and then suddenly started losing her rag when they basically said, no, we're fine. And she started losing it completely, then started accusing the parents of human trafficking. Eventually, the mother lost her temper and pushed her over before they stormed off, because they just tried to walk away from her, but she was 10-minute rant. Mate, 10 minutes.
Jesus Christ, people, man.
Yeah, and this is Lindsay Lohan, who should know better. So I would suggest to her PR firm, put her back in the box.
Herbie needs a sequel.
No, Herbie does not need a sequel. Do not give
her... No, it does. Give Herbie a sequel, right?
No. Lindsay Lohan is
recovering.
The last thing Lindsay Lohan needs is another hit of anything.
No, just get Herbie Gets Out of Rehab. Herbie does some good in the world, some actual good.
Yeah, we might have to cut that bit, by the way.
Sorry.
but anyway.
It's anime gatekeeping and that, yes. There will be a lot of fans that are like, no, it's my toy, I'm not sharing it. But tough titties to them.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. Change happens. The world evolves. People vote for different parties.
Okay, Tucky. I'm going to cut you off there because you will continue with that.
I've got a list so long.
I know what you're like. But here's a question then. Imagine all of the anime that you've seen, right? Imagine all of the anime. What would you like to see a movie of do well at Western cinemas?
The thing is, like, are we just sticking with animation exclusively, or are we talking like live action?
Live action or animation, okay?
I think Pat LeBore would be a great live action.
See, I actually agree with you on that. I do think Pat LeBore would be a great live action, and I especially think that because of the level of special effects that we can do now.
I think now is the time for it to make a resurface. I mean, this show was big, like, in the 90s. It was, like, top of all the VHS charts.
It was
big.
It was massive in the 80s. Never mind the 90s, the 80s. Yeah.
Early 90s, 80s and that, yeah, but it was huge.
The other thing about Pat LeBore, though, the brilliant thing about Pat LeBore, and I'm loving your suggestion, by the way, the brilliant thing about Pat LeBore is it took the idea of giant robots and made them utilitarian, made them mundane, so they were everyday things. They were used in construction, in heavy industry, they were used in the military, and the name Pat LeBore comes from patrol labor. Because the robots are called labors because they do work. The ones that they're focusing on are the ones that are part of the police force. Because when you have giant robots roaming around, basically doing work and control, there's also a rise in robot crime.
Mm-hmm.
And so the police need their own giant robots to combat this crime. And so the Pat LeBore comes about. And I think that's a brilliant idea because Pat LeBore could totally work. It's a believable sci-fi advancement, right?
Yeah. Like you say, the special effects, all of the technology at our fingertips now, it's been crying out for something like that.
Yeah.
And like you say, live action, yes. Another live action. I don't know if they've actually done a live action of Eden of the East.
Live action Eden of the East doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist?
No.
The thing that would work for that would be that there's the storyline of, like, you're given basically unlimited money by a bloke who says, like, you know, change the world. I mean, I think there's only one person, like, is it Jeff Bezos, the guy who owns Amazon?
Yeah.
He's the only guy in the world who could do it at the moment.
Yeah.
But he can give you, like, $100 billion and give you, like, a cell phone with somebody who will make any request come true.
Yeah.
And I think that would be great. The thing is, I'd love... If I had, like, the production nuance, the equipment, the time, I would make a live action one, but I'd set it in London, and that would piss people off. But I would set it in London rather than Tokyo. It's all because of the political corruption angle that they use in the Japanese, in the anime and whatnot. I don't think it translates well for a Western audience. Whereas corruption in Westminster's like bread and butter these days. So I think that would go, not so much a movie, actually. I think a Netflix series.
Possibly, yeah. I could see it working as a series rather than a movie. I know people talk about how they'd love to see a live-action Cowboy Bebop, but I'll be honest, I don't. I think Cowboy Bebop deserves to just be as it is and let people appreciate it for just how good it is on its own.
Well, I think most people go on that on the back of Benedict Cumberbatch's cosplay pictures.
Yeah,
I don't know if they were photoshopped or not, but he looks the part. He looks so much like Spike.
Yeah. We've seen that parody trailer for Berserk, the live-action parody trailer.
Yeah.
But I do actually think Berserk would be pretty good as a live-action series if you made it right. Do not make it like Attack on Titan.
That was rushed. That was an example of they could smell the money, so they tried to get a subpar product out as fast as possible.
Yeah, but if you look at TV shows like Game of Thrones, you could do Berserk.
Oh, I could. It could actually overtake Game of Thrones, in my opinion, because of the brutality in it, in parts.
Do you know what would make a really good action movie? If you basically had it as kind of an addition, rather than a remake, have it as an addition, right?
Mm-hmm.
Black Lagoon.
Oh.
Because the action's all set in Macau for a start, so you already have a place to film. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't take a lot to have the characters, you know, to have everybody kicked out, to find the right people to play the roles. And you basically do it as an addendum, so Rock is already part of the company. He's part of the group already. And you make it for the fans. You can do the whole introduction in kind of flashbacks. So when it introduces Rock, you can see him being sold by his company to to that group, you see.
This is something that could be kickstarted. That sounds like, crowdfunded things, because, I mean, like I say, if I had the money, the time, the actual skill, I'd probably put in for something, because there's a lot of potential there. There's an absolute ton of potential.
Some of the things that people believe would make a good live action, but I don't actually think it would. Psychopaths, I'm not too sure about. But High School of the Dead, I disagree with. I know there's a lot of people who wanted a High School of the Dead.
But we know them actually, types of people.
Yeah. Same with the fairy tale ones. One Punch Man, not sure.
Would that be a comedy?
See,
it's like in superhero movies, it'd be a comedy superhero movie.
I'll be honest, before I agree to a One Punch Man live action, I want to see how the Saint Young Men live action turns out.
That was thing, because, I mean, we saw that they're doing the Saint Young Men, which is Jesus and Buddha living together.
Yeah.
Housemates.
Oh.
And you sent us a link to a clip of it.
Yeah.
And they've done it in virtual reality, which is absolutely astounding. And it's weird to sit there and you can see from all angles on YouTube in VR.
Yeah.
You can actually see Jesus and Buddha panic over a spider.
Yeah. Another one that I don't understand why they want a live action of it is Code Geass.
It would be a political drama, but I can't see it like translating well.
Exactly, but two that I'm going to throw out there that I think you will totally agree with.
Yeah.
The first one has to be Monster.
Hmm. I can see it.
You know, Naoki Urasawa's Monster.
Would you do it as a series or a movie, though?
I'd do it as a series. I'd totally do it as a series, not as a movie. Monster deserves to be a series. It deserves to play out. Let me put it this way. You know all those people who... You know all those fan theories and stuff like that that people love to come out with? Monster is perfect for that.
Well, there'll be a lot of hoo-ha over the copyright because there's already, like, movies called Monster and whatnot.
Yeah, I know, but they could just say Naoki Urasawa's Monster.
Yeah, there we go.
You see?
That's sorted.
It's sorted, then. You don't need to call it, like... I know there's a movie called Monster which had... What's-her-face playing a psychopath, but it's a TV series called Monster, so it doesn't really cross over with the movie, does it?
No.
And the other one, and this one, there is no copyright worry at all, Golgo 13.
Yeah. It's a weird one, because I wouldn't say that would translate well, but I could see gaining some success. Say, well, we're going on about like animation on the big screen, like the My Hero Academia's animation, but we just went into live action.
Yeah, but this is the thing. Live action ultimately leads to the big screen, doesn't it?
Yeah.
There's loads of shows where, because the show is basically a real-world show, so to speak, they make the transition to live action easy, stuff like Clannad and stuff like that, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
But there are others where it doesn't really make the jump as readily. They're usually your more fantastic ones, your more sci-fi ones, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
They did that Blood, the Last Vampire movie, didn't they?
Aye. Did we review that last time, or was it?
I didn't do that one, not the movie. The interesting thing, though, is the live-action movie adaptations of Parasite were pretty good. Actually, I could see Parasite getting a Western adaptation. I think it would work.
It's the thing that's inside of my house was the special effects for Miggy.
Yeah.
As the hand, like, I don't know, it's like, it's off. I know it's like, you know, I'm not going for realism, yeah, because it's... But it's just like the hand, I don't know, it's just something about like deformed hands. That I don't know if it's like a natural human instinct to be like, oh, that's uncomfortable. I don't know, maybe I'm just not tolerant to weird.
Possibly, maybe weird body parts.
Hands.
Yeah. But the thing is, I think Parasite could easily make a transition to a Western live action movie adaptation. I think it'd work as well.
Yeah. Well, as long as they don't try and like portray it as like all a horror, because it's much more than just like, we're being overtaken.
It's got questions about humanity and stuff like that in there. Actually, regarding that, another series that even though the hairstyles were more terrifying than the vampires themselves, but I actually think Shiki could probably make a really good series.
I'm just remembering the hairstyles as well.
I knew you were chuckling at that.
The blacked out eyes as well.
Yeah, but the thing is, that could really work, and vampires are big in the West, aren't they?
Oh, a huge religion. So, I mean, imagine, Twilight can do well.
Yeah, but imagine they basically set it, say, in the American Midwest. You have a small village, small farming community, in the middle of nowhere, dead-end town, rich family moves in, they move into the old colonial mansion. They keep themselves to themselves, but then weird things start happening. And the local doctor, see, I'm pitching this as a Western live action series. The local doctor, he notices something. People are dying for very odd reasons. He discovers that there's a vampire epidemic. People are basically being turned into vampires. They're being killed and turned into vampires. But then the twist is that the humans, through anger and revenge, basically become even worse than the vampires ever were.
Yeah. Who was the real monster?
Yeah. And that's
holds
the
up
thing.
The mirror. It's one of them.
I hate to throw this at Disney, but it is the riddle to guess if you can. Sing the bells of Notre Dame. What makes the monster and what makes the man?
Like you say, I mean, I think we've went on quite a bit now for what should be.
Yeah, we have.
But the thing is, like, this is a lot of potential, and I dare say, so if they're listening, if anybody in power is listening, take it and run with it, because you've got the money to make it happen. We're just sitting here shooting the breeze, you know. There are people out there who can make these things reality, and I'll tell you something, like, you know, 9 out of 10 of them will make you an absolute fortune if done correct.
Speaking of monsters and men, I have got first up to bat, Higurashi no Naku Koroni, or as it's better known in English, for some obscure reason, When They Cry. It doesn't actually explain who it is who's crying, just when they cry. Is it a baby crying? Is it an animal crying? What exactly is crying?
What is in pain and how do we help it?
Well, here's the thing. The actual title should be When the Cicadas Cry, right?
Yeah, see, that's a bit more...
That makes a lot more sense, because if anyone is familiar with the life cycle of cicadas, which... In America, they do actually have cicadas as well, and that's why it's even more confusing as to why this is just called When They Cry. And as any anime fan who would probably be the people who are watching this would know, they would be familiar with cicadas as well.
Yeah, that sounds like in 90% of all slice of life.
Yeah, so why would you remove the word cicadas? That's my first bugbear with this. Anyway, most people, most anime fans will probably know this series as That Psycho Lolly Show, which I might have got round to watching at one point, right?
That's the most accurate description I can think of it.
Right. The story is about a young high school boy, Keiichi Maibara, and he's just moved into the quiet little village of Hinamizawa in the summer of 1983, and he quickly becomes friends with his schoolmates, Rena Ryugu, Mion Sonozaki, Satoko Hojo, and Rika Furude. Now, All seems sweetness and light. It's a good village. Everybody's happy, go lucky, blah, blah, blah. But there is a dark secret in the village. And very quickly, you find out that Keiichi might be going a little bit mad when he gets paranoid that somebody is trying to kill him. Now, this is actually based on the murder mystery visual novel.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I can't remember who produced that. I think it was Seventh Expansion that made that. And it did all right. And then they basically made an anime adaptation of it. They never expected the anime adaptation to do really well, but it did.
And so kind of Danganronpa kind of territory here.
Well, this is the thing. Danganronpa takes its cues from this rather than the other way round.
Yeah.
Because this anime adaptation of that game came out in 2006, long before Danganronpa was even a glint in its creator's eyes.
Creepy, but yes.
So anyway, I'm only going to refer to it as Higurashi from now on, okay? Because I know what I'm talking about. If you don't know what I'm talking about, well, tough, okay? And I know there is that other Higurashi, which is the murder mystery thing. I can't remember what it was called.
I can't imagine listeners to tune into that exact point where say where you, they haven't heard the description of like at the beginning. So, yeah. Yeah, right.
Anyway, I'm only going to refer to this as Higurashi from now on because it's easier. The name is just too long, and I refuse to call it When They Cry because that's a stupid name. You heard it here. It's a stupid name. When the Cicadas Cry is a good name.
Yep.
When They Cry is a stupid name. So that's my final say on that. What you have is basically this this kind of Groundhog Day murder mystery where lots of things are going wrong and lots of people going crazy and killing other people. But the Groundhog Day means that different people are dying in different ways, sometimes very horrific ways. You have some characters who die in actually quite horrible ways. Rena gets killed brutally by Keiichi. Mion has her nails ripped out by her sister. Satoko, she's horribly, brutally killed. Actually, that scene I thought was quite cruel. I understood why they did it, but I did think it was quite cruel. I'll be honest. My problems with Higurashi is that it felt like it was trying a bit too hard to be horrific. You remember the?
It's one of them ones that kind of hits the nail on the head, but then it just doesn't stop hitting it on the head.
Yeah. You know those Italian horror movies? The Lucio Fulci ones are that sort of ilk of horror movie where they really didn't know when enough was enough.
Mm-hmm.
Higurashi is a bit like that. It starts off really interesting. The first time loop starts off really interesting with Keiichi becoming more and more paranoid that somebody's trying to kill him and becoming convinced that Mion and Rena are the ones who are trying to kill him. And it's four episodes, so don't worry. I'm not spoiling the rest of the series by saying eventually he kills them both with a baseball bat. There is something going on. There is a curse at work, which you'll find out much, 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 much later on. There is a curse at work, though, which is causing these things to happen. But then everything resets and things start again, yada, yada, yada. Problem I have is that they use that as a license to do horrible things to other people. That's not balanced. See, when you watch a horror, you need some kind of balance. You need something to kind of make the horror work properly. So you need those moments of lightness, those moments of brevity, those moments of pleasantness. And there's not enough of that that goes into Higurashi. It's there in the first arc when Keiichi starts going a little bit nuts, starts getting more and more paranoid. There's no point where he basically can take the foot off the gas and go, okay, maybe I need help. You see what I mean?
Yeah, it just snowballs and gets worse as it goes.
Yeah. Whereas if it was a normal person, they would basically go, okay, I think someone's out to get me. Maybe I should call somebody. Maybe I need help. I'm going to get some help.
Yeah.
They'd speak to people around them. They wouldn't be in a situation where there would be nobody who could actually help them. And yeah. So there's an unbelievability to the actual events. And I understand that that needs to be there because it's a horror. Because it is. It's a horror. But it's a horror based on what people do to each other. And that's where it starts becoming a bit more unbelievable, because we're expected to believe that people will do this to each other with no qualms because they've gone a bit psycho. And I understand there are horrible people out there, but...
Do they give enough, like, padding for motive?
See, this is the thing. The motive, if you take Satoko's death, for example, Satoko's death is because she loves her brother and she wants her brother to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the reasons why it's brutal, is because the lass who kills her is in love with her brother as well. And for some reason, I don't know why, but for some obscure reason, she's forgotten that she made a promise to Satoko's brother that she would look after her until he came back. Conveniently forgetting that reason, do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's where I have the problem. There's a lot of this plot artifice to make things work. That's why it has that unbelievability. If it had the unbelievability because it was relying on a lot more of the fantasy element, then I think it could work better when there's a mysteriousness about these events. So basically, if you didn't have that connection between Satoko's killer and Satoko's brother, for example, that would have made Satoko's death that little bit more mysterious.
Yeah.
It would have still been brutal. It would have still been horrifying, but it would have been more mysterious, and therefore you would have had more questions to ask instead of having this artificial kind of motive placed on it.
So they've opted for more the gore and shock factor.
Yeah, it's more the gore and shock factor.
Rather than actually padding it out.
Rather than raising the atmosphere, which if you watch a show like Ghost Hound, which isn't really a horror, it's more atmospheric. There are horrific elements in Ghost Hound, but it focuses more on developing the atmosphere. And if you watch Ghost Hound, you'll notice that there's a big difference in the way that these two shows approach the development of the atmosphere. Higurashi relies on gore, it relies on shock, it relies on a lot of the things that the 70s horror directors and the video nasties of the 80s and 90s relied on.
B-movies.
Not even B-movies. Whereas something like Ghost Town relies on the development of the atmosphere through the use of sound, for example, the use of white noise and various things like that. That sort of thing. And that works for me in terms of developing that horrific atmosphere. Something that in video games, Silent Hill did very, very well, but Resident Evil didn't do as well.
Yeah. Resident Evil had the zombie dog at the beginning.
Yeah, but Silent Hill was just covered in mist.
Yeah, it was like you don't know what's coming from for you, where it's coming for you, when it's going to hit you. That kind of tension.
Yeah,
yeah, good bit of tension makes a great horror.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what's missing from Higurashi. You know something horrific is coming, you just don't know when, but you know it's going to be gory and gruesome, and you kind of become desensitized to that as the series progresses. So by the time you get to some of the more horrific happenings, you just kind of, it's not that bad, really.
Yeah, it's just that trying to outgore itself like previously, and it's not done much else.
In terms of the design, obviously it's based on a visual novel, so the designs are taken from that. The voice acting is pretty good in both the Japanese and American dub. It's pretty straightforward. It's been around for a while, so it's one of those ones. If you haven't seen it, watch it. Make your own mind up. Maybe you'll like it. Maybe you won't. But I wouldn't say I was a massive fan.
October's
Halloween time, yeah. And it's kind of the kind of show where, you know, you could watch it over Halloween and enjoy it.
It's not like there's anything else going on there.
Yeah. But that's all I can say about Higurashi. It'll appeal to some people, but if you're into your horror and you understand what horror's about, basically, Higurashi will appeal to people who think that horror is something like Five Nights at Freddy's.
worst kind of people.
Right.
Kids who watch YouTube.
Basically, yeah. If you're of the type who thinks that horror is something more like Cabin in the Woods or something like that, then you'll understand Higurashi, you'll understand what it's going for, but you might not like it as much. I mean, it is still entertaining in a lot of ways. Anyway, moving on to you, Tucky.
Yeah, so from horror to absolutely horrific. I went back into Yu-Gi-Oh! Of all things, I went back into Yu-Gi-Oh!
But you promised me that relationship was over, Tucky.
Well, I thought it was over because I did the review a few months, days, hours, how long ago was it? God knows. But I did the review of the final Yu-Gi-Oh! Movie, which tied everything up in a nice little bow.
Yeah.
And then I believe it's Manga Entertainment who've sent us Pyramid of Light.
Yes.
And I've had to go back and I've had to go into it. Please keep sending your stuff, by the way. We do review them. This is proof. You make a sit down and I watch these. I've still got the rest of the Digimon Try to do.
Never mind Digimon Try. You've got Digimon Tamers and various others as well.
Oh, sounds kinky. Digimon Try. Digimon Tamers. Anyway, so back on to Yu-Gi-Oh! And I've watched the Pyramid of Light movie. And I was watching this while I was house-sitting for a friend. And it was a weird thing because I'm in this like lonely house and that, and I get all the focus. And I notice when I'm at home, usually I can put anime on. And it's sometimes, if it's not good, it's just background noise. The atmosphere that I was in, like I say, I was house-sitting, so it was just me in a room by myself. Sounds seedy. It's not. Honestly. And I don't know, it's like the ambience kind of like, you know, gives you the full focus. And this movie was not something I wanted to sit and watch alone because it was painful. It was basically, this is set 3 years after the original Yu-Gi-Oh! Series is finished.
Okay.
Basically, you know, Yugi's like, he's a star still. He's got people literally mobbing him to have a duel. I mean, you don't really see that like in real life. I know there's a lot of this thing where it's like, oh, he's the champion. Will you take us on, champ? You know, some random on the street.
This is where I get confused because Anthony Joshua just basically won in the boxing, yeah?
Yeah.
And you don't see people walking up to him in the street going, oh, champ, come on, give me a punch, give me a punch. I'll throw a punch at you.
Yeah, it's one of the things, like, you know, you in your sport, you've won that title belt. Some stranger off the street comes and like, I'll take that belt off you. Fighters. Because one, it's against the rules. You'll get any, like, any championships, anything taken away, and I think you get your license revoked.
Yeah.
So if Yugi was to go on an unsanctioned duel monsters match outside of it, I don't know if they've got similar rules, but it's the same principle. Yeah. It's like a champion's a champion, but only within that arena.
Yeah.
In real life, let him have a real life. But Joey steps in and is like, no, you want to take on you, take on me. And he puts on this like whole kind of Italian American mobster stereotype kind of accent.
Can I ask you a question? When you say Joey and he's Italian American and adopts a mobster type accent,
No, not friends. This is
I was gonna say you're not talking about Tribbiani, eh?
No, I'm talking about Joey Wheeler. God, I can remember his second name. That's how bad it's got.
No, but wouldn't that be amazing?
Joey Tribbiani defending Yu-Gi-Oh! On the streets.
Yes.
Hey, I've got a Ferrari. It's boxes. I've seen too much Friends as well to know that reference.
Can you imagine anyway, though?
But it's... I'll get onto the movie. Yeah. So Pyramid of Light... It is a usual story plot. Basically, Kaiba, he spent his fortune and hours obsessing over a way to beat the Pharaoh. I'm not saying Yugi because it's the Pharaoh who beats him. And this movie, again, is no exception. Every Yugi movie is like, Kaiba, I want to beat the Pharaoh. It's like some kind of outside thing.
Is this some weird yaoi fan fiction?
It's, I don't know, but Kaiba's hard on for the Pharaoh throughout time.
Kaiba wants to beat the Pharaoh.
Off. it's a funny thing because, like I say, this has my full attention and I have everything. All of my senses were on this movie. So I'm going to be highly critical of it.
Go for it.
I never have that. You know, the lights are turned off. Everything, focus, laser light on this movie. And it's the same thing. Like, the wider story is, a prophecy is about to come true after about 2,000 years or so. The Egyptian god Anubis, yes, that god of mummification. He's not the god of death or anything. He's the god of mummification.
There was no god of mummification.
There was. It's Anubis. Look it up.
Anubis was the god of death, wasn't it?
No, he's the god of embalming dead bodies. Because jackals were seen at cemeteries and some of the priests started wearing the like jackal heads and that. And Anubis became the god of mummification.
Oh, it was embalming and the dead.
Well, it's left to interpretation.
Yeah.
Well, his main duty was mummification. Some historians will say, well, people praised it as death and that. But no, it was actually the form of mummification.
No, it was...
I'm not an Egyptologist. So...
Apparently, it was mummification and the afterlife, to be precise.
Well, it kind of makes sense because he's like...
Mummification and the afterlife kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah, it's basically death, but you got to be strict about these things.
Yes.
So he was defeated millennia ago in a shadow game. Who knew? Anubis the Weeb.
Hang on. Okay, I'm confused by something. Right, I'm just going to stop you there because I need to jump in here. I feel there is something that I need to point out. Right.
Go on.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Is about a card game, yeah?
Yep.
That was developed in the last few years that everybody is playing and it's really popular, yeah?
Yes.
How the hell was Anubis defeated in a shadow game involving a card game that was only developed a couple of years ago?
Right, well, this is the plot hole, and this is the big plot hole with Yu-Gi-Oh! They lean on a lot of Egyptian mythology and all of the monsters and whatnot. And this card game was supposedly developed in the anime by Pegasus a few years ago.
Hang on. Pegasus as in the Greek winged horse?
No, Pegasus as in the white-haired guy goes, Kaiba boy!
Oh, him.
Yugi boy!
See, I'm getting really confused now because you brought up Anubis and now all the mythology is open.
No.
I actually thought for a second there that the card game had been developed by a winged horse.
It would have been a lot more entertaining, put it that way. It was so busy. Anubis, he was defeated, but there was a foretelling that he would return in about 2,000 years, give or take a few millennia or so.
After the story's run its course.
It was like a prophecy or foretelling or whatever. You know, he'd return to seek vengeance with his own Millennium Puzzle, the Pyramid of Light. As everybody knows, the Millennium Puzzle is like a upside-down pyramid thing that Yugi wears dangling. And it looks as ridiculous as an 80s rapper car hood on a necklace. I don't think anyone's pointed that out before, but I'm pointing it out now. It looks as ridiculous as that.
Well, my main issue with that whole necklace thing was that Yugi's neck isn't that strong, right? And that thing must weigh a ton.
Well, it is. You got to think. I think it's made of like solid gold because Egyptians went expensive or they didn't go at all. And it's like a lot of pieces, and it contained the soul of an eternal pharaoh in it. So you've got to bet that some extra spirit energy added onto that. You know,
when you said eternal pharaoh, I suddenly had the bangles in my head. An eternal pharaoh.
Now you've got us thinking of Jojo. Work like an Egyptian.
Yeah, can you imagine that? The thing is, it works for this movie, though, because you can have Kaiba going to the Pharaoh, close your eyes, give me your hand.
the Yowie fan fiction's going in meltdown. So apparently Anubis has his own Millennium Puzzle, which is kind of like opposite. It's not gold, but it's a pyramid. And it's silver.
A silver pyramid? Ooh. Is it representing the moon?
I have no idea. It's just a silver pyramid that gets nicked when Anubis kind of breaks out of his coffin. Because everyone's like, oh no, someone's stolen the mummy. Even though no one steals the mummy. Who's going to nick a corpse? What are they going to do with it?
So, hang on. When Anubis breaks out of his coffin, the puzzle gets nicked, yeah?
Yeah, along with it.
Along with Anubis.
Yeah.
So, did Anubis break out of his coffin on his own, or did he have help?
I think he broke out on... Well, no, he broke out on his own. And there's kind of like a side thing. Because like I say, the main plot is Kyber versus Yugi. Or Kyber versus the Pharaoh.
All right.
And basically, like I say, Kyber's sitting there in his high-tech factory. What do you call it? Factory? I don't know. And the dude's got like the money to make his own Yu-Gi-Oh cards. He's got like enough... these dual monster cards, I should say. He's got enough money to like print replicas of his blue eyes white dragon till the sun comes home, you know. But he doesn't use that. He doesn't think, you know, I'll just buy the Shadow Games company and, you know, make my own cards and make cards better than Yu-Gi-Oh's. Huge plot hole as well. You know, he's got enough money to make a blue eyes white dragon style jet, but he doesn't have enough money to make his own cards or buy the company that makes them. So
I'm Kyber very confused at the moment.
Kyber's flies off to see Pegasus, obviously the inventor slash creator slash genius behind the dual monsters cards. And he's basically, look, I need a way to beat Yugi's free god cards. And Pegasus is like, you know, he's no longer this, I'm this big man. I'm going to run these shadow games. I'm going to send everyone to the shadow realm kind of guy. He's lost his millennium eye. So he's living his life out in seclusion in his like mansion villas, sipping red wine spritzers. And they actually make reference to that quite a bit.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
There are a lot of references to the millennium this, the millennium that. Is Yu-Gi-Oh the reason why we started referring to people as millennials?
I have no idea. If there was such a thing as a millennial, the alpha millennial would be him. Because he's all right when he's on the job and that, but he's just a lazy twat when he's not. I don't know. What's the Daily Mail telling us nowadays? What's he destroyed? Yu-Gi-Oh destroyed avocados. Yu-Gi-Oh destroyed butchers who hang England flags in the windows.
I don't know. Does watching Yu-Gi-Oh give you cancer?
Tests are still coming back on that. But it's so Kyber's like off. He's getting his white red wine spritzers and that, and he's like, oh, I see you had two cards in secret to defeat Yugi's god cards. And like Pegasus is like, what? I only thought I had one. Pegasus has got this all like, oh no, foreboding, oh no, darkness is coming, bad times are coming, oh no, ah, headache, ah, ooh, a red wine spritzer. And it basically goes on, you know, piss poor duel between Kyber and Pegasus. And the story develops into Kyber versus the Pharaoh. Didn't see that one coming. And there's this whole like foreboding shadowing of like, oh, Anubis is doing this. Anubis traps people in his pyramid of light piece. Like, draws off their life force to, and as the game goes on, he gains more life as life points are lost between the two duelists.
So it's basically the plot from The Mummy, the Brendan Fraser movie.
Yeah, it's practically exactly that, thinking about it now. I never actually made that. But Anubis comes back. He's the big bad guy at the end. Like, Yugi, the Pharaoh's like, Kyber, stop! Can't you see something bad's happening? And Guy was like, nah, mate, I'm going to beat your ass for once. I'm winning. Didn't try and welch out of this one. And then Anubis pops up. Rah. Anubis gets defeated. I've got nothing else to say about it. It's the usual. The voice acting's dare. The graphics are typically make you think of old 90s. If that. The hardcore Yu-Gi-Oh fan would love it. I'll give it that. For me, it was too predictable.
Hmm.
It brought absolutely nothing new to the table. Whereas, like, the last Yu-Gi-Oh movie, like, the last Yu-Gi-Oh movie, that brought in, like, new characters, like, you know, ooh, let's make the dual monsters out of pieces of fruit and make them magical girls. This one was basically, let's take the blue-eyes white dragon and make it a little bit more powerful and call it the shining blue-eyes white dragon. Yeah, people will eat that up. And I didn't. It's like a bland repackaging attempt to keep Yugi relevant as times like ticked over. For me, I wouldn't watch it again, but it's out on Blu-ray DVD. You know, if you're a big Yu-Gi-Oh fan, sure, go for it. But for me, nah, I'm not watching Yu-Gi-Oh in such an immersive environment again, because it's absolutely awful.
Okay. So on that note, we are at the end of the show. We were talking about movie adaptations, live-action adaptations of animated titles, actually. We didn't really touch on Western titles that we'd like to see made into live-action movies. But let us know what you think about that topic. Leave us a comment, send us a message. You'll find all of our shows on our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, or the podcast provider of your choice. So if you are listening through anything like that, then leave us a rating. It does help us with visibility. Until next week, I have been Rob.
And I've been Tucky.
We'll see you all later.
Toodle pip.